Hello, everyone. Welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European Macro Research at Natixis. And with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello, also from my side. So today we'd like to talk about the distributional effects of monetary policy. That is, we will ask how changes in the monetary policy stance affect income and wealth of households, paying particular attention to how these effects differ across households. For this, we have with us a guest from the European Central Bank, who is an expert on this topic. His name is Martin Dosche, and Martin is an advisor in the economics department of the ECB and was an ECB staff member since 2014. And before 2014, Martin worked at the Central Bank of Belgium. So welcome to the podcast, Martin.
Hi, Dirk. Hi, Klaus. Good morning. I'm very happy to be with you today. Before we start, let me just highlight that I will be sharing my own views, which are not necessarily those of the ECB.
Right. We understand that very well. So let's start by having a look back at what happened. So under the presidency of Mario Draghi, the ECB has pushed interest rates quite significantly into negative territory and has also purchased large amounts of bonds in order to spur growth and lift inflation up. This policy essentially did two things. Number one, it pushed up a number of asset prices, in particular bond, equity, and housing prices. And number two, it reduced the returns on safe short-term assets, such as cash or time deposits. So in my own research work, I've studied the distributional consequences of the first channel that I just mentioned, that is how asset price changes affect households differently in the cross-section of households. And my paper at the time was published 2016 in the European Economic Review, but I've never looked at the distributional implications of this second channel, that is the low safe rates of return on safe short-term assets and how that would affect households differently. So some commentators have argued that the second channel is quite important, and in particular in the press, it was often mentioned that the ECB, by pushing interest rates down into negative territory, was sort of dispossessing savers, in particular low-income households. So my question to you would be, what evidence do we have on this front now that, you know, we have quite some distance to that period and we would be able to look back perhaps more calmly? In particular, what data is available to assess this question, whether this has actually happened, and how reliable is the data that we actually have to answer whether this has happened or not?
So indeed, the second channel that you refer to, Klaus, has often been called the cash flow channel of monetary policy. So to understand this better, we have been looking into the household sector accounts in combination with the Household Finance and Consumption Survey here at the ECB. So the sector accounts include interest flows, while the HFCS has individual households, nominal asset and liability holdings. And with that data, we have been able to look at this issue more deeply. And our main findings were that older and also wealthier households were indeed losing interest income, while younger households and less wealthy households were gaining in terms of lower interest payments. So you may remember that at the time, actually, many people with a fixed rate mortgage went to their bank and negotiated a cheaper interest rate on their mortgage. So in present value, those savings, let's say, for those households were quite substantial. And if you think about it, I mean, those results do make sense, as younger households often have a mortgage, whereas older households tend to not to have a mortgage anymore and hold larger amounts of their wealth in liquid savings. I mean, that said, people at the very bottom of the wealth distribution typically hold very little assets and also very little liabilities because they are credit constrained. So the level of interest rates and changes in interest rates do not really affect those households very much through this channel, at least. And in the HFCS, we also, but I mean, At the same time, in the HFCS, we also found a very small number of households that have apparently invested most of their wealth in bank deposits. It's of course not a very, let's say, sophisticated or diversified portfolio, but it does happen. And indeed, I think those households must have felt the drop in interest rates very much. That's clear. But in the large scheme of things, we could not find really evidence that lower interest rates through this cash flow channel was contributing to higher inequality. No.
Right. So in my own research, I actually found that the share of wealth invested in nominal assets is actually very high in Germany, or more generally is very high in countries that historically have experienced rather low inflation rates. And that may explain why in these countries, perhaps the outcry was a little larger in response to the low nominal or even negative nominal interest rates. Would you agree with that assessment, or?
Yeah, I think I can subscribe to that. I mean, indeed, there are clearly cross-country differences in that dimension. As you say, past experiences in terms of inflation over the past, I mean, going back decades in time, right, do affect the way people make their investment decisions today. I think that's a fair point indeed.
In this sense, perhaps also the current inflationary period will have long-lasting implications on perhaps investment behavior going forward.
Yeah, I could imagine. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And in terms of the size of the effect, sorry to chip in, is it really a big effect? We've seen big distributional effect negligible in the grand scheme of things?
I think when you look at larger groups, let's say older versus young, wealthier versus less wealthy, the amounts were not necessarily that big through this cash flow channel. But again, when you look then more at the finer distribution, there are always individual households that are very much affected. As I said, when people were able to renegotiate their mortgage, let's say with a fixed rate of 4-5% to something like 1%, that is in present value, that is a huge windfall. So I would say it depends. But there is a lot of heterogeneity in the household sector, and this is the red thread, I think, through this kind of work.
Let's perhaps also not forget that besides the asset valuation channel I mentioned at the beginning and the cash flow channel that we've just discussed, there are obviously other distributional implications of low rates that operate perhaps through the labor market, right? So yeah. Have you looked at that as well? How important, I mean, can we assess distributional implications operating through the labor market?
Yeah. Yeah, well, also here at the ECB, several colleagues have looked into this, and indeed they came to the conclusion that that the lower interest rates actually work mostly through the employment channel. So when the ECB lowered rates, this was most effective, let's say, through general equilibrium effects affecting in particular employment of lower skilled and lower income households. So in through that channel, actually, there's been a much more powerful equalizing impact on income. So I would argue that that channel was probably much more important in this discussion than the channel that we just discussed through the cash flow.
So now let's have a look at the present situation, i.e. this year, the year 2023. The interest rate environment is obviously now quite different. The ECB has hiked its policy rate by a total of 375 basis points compared to the summer of last year. So what distribution effects do these rate increases have, and are the distributional implications of rate increases different or is there symmetry with respect to rate cuts, or should we expect now have different effects now that rates are rising?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so clearly a lot of what I've just said also works in the opposite direction. So we should not deny that. Older and wealthier households who have invested more in bank deposits are gaining from the increase in interest rates, while younger people with a mortgage will face a much higher interest burden, at least to the extent that they have an adjustable rate mortgage, or that they are still planning to get a new mortgage for a housing project, let's say. At the same time, I mean, in the euro area, most outstanding mortgages are of a fixed rate type. So the stock of mortgages has this very clear feature. So the increase in interest rates will not immediately be felt by those people, those mortgages. So because when interest rates rise, households don't go to their bank and want to renegotiate their interest rate or want to ask for a higher interest rate. So in that sense, a large part of the household sector is actually not immediately affected by rising rates. And what this means in terms of consumption, for example, is something that we recently looked at with the ECB Consumers Expectations Survey. And there we found evidence that households with an adjustable rate mortgage have indeed reduced by more their expectations about future consumption compared to renters or homeowners without a mortgage. So again, this group is small, but in terms of let's say heterogeneity or inequality, those issues do matter. But when you look at, let's say, the aggregate, I think this asymmetric impact is clearly something to keep in mind as a central bank in terms of the transmission of your policies. Where I think that the rise in interest rates are currently biting more is through the valuation of assets with longer durations, such as equity and housing. Stock prices, as you know, have declined quite a bit since interest rates rose. And also house prices are now starting to go down in several euro area countries. So while we can debate about welfare implications of these asset price changes, I mean, Klaus knows for sure more about this, but the academic literature in that area is still, I would say, under development. But I believe that these developments are mainly benefiting younger households who are still about to enter the housing market, while older households who want to sell their, let's say, real estate to enjoy a higher consumption, they are definitely, let's say, losing from lower asset valuations. That's something to acknowledge indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, right. But in the end, someone has to reduce consumption if the central bank tightens, and it happens to be perhaps particularly stringent for people having a adjustable rate mortgage. That is certainly something that's going to happen. I'm not sure yet that bank deposit holders have enjoyed a great boon at this point, because the deposit rates, the higher rates, haven't been transmitting really into the deposit rates that banks pay, but that is certainly something that we expect to happen very soon.
Yeah.
So now let's look now at something more general. I would like to hear your opinion about whether a central bank like the ECB, why it should be concerned at all about the distributional effects of its policy. Aren't the distributional policies something that falls squarely into the realm of national fiscal authorities, which usually deal with these issues, pass laws, and sort of decide about, whether they want to adjust the income distribution or not? Is that something that the ECB should at all be concerned with?
I would say yes and no. So, I mean, indeed, when you look at the large trends in inequality, for example, when comparing the US with the euro area, inequality is mainly determined by secular drivers such as globalization, taxation, labor market regulation, schooling systems. So all issues on which monetary policy hardly has any impact, right? So this falls, yeah, squarely within the mandate of fiscal authorities, I would say. But still, the way a central bank achieves its objective of price stability and manages the business cycle does have an impact on people's lives. For example, income inequality tends to go up in recessions and to go down in booms, as unemployment is mostly something that affects households with lower incomes. To the extent that skills are acquired on the job, for example, unemployment spells can have a lifelong impact on individuals' earnings, well beyond the business cycle, and also on long-term inequality. So central banks need to be aware that the way they manage the business cycle has an impact on inequality through let's say the employment channel. And on top of that, central bank also need to explain their policies to citizens. As part of our democratic system, the ECB is accountable to the European Parliament. As inequality has been on the rise over the past decades, I think it's natural that central banks explain clearly what has been their role or not in these developments. So to the extent that a central bank manages to explain its policies better, it will also receive higher trust among citizens, which is a valuable asset to achieve your objective of price stability, especially when you rely also very much on the stability of inflation expectations, which are clearly related to the degree of trust that citizens have in the central bank. So indeed, I do think that central banks should be concerned about distributional effects of their policies in that context. Yeah.
Yeah, you said that the primary mandate of the ECB is price stability, and I think that goal keeps them really busy at the moment. And unlike in the past, where perhaps this was less of an issue, and we could sort of look at all kinds of other issues. So, but in what sense are now these distributional considerations important for achieving this primary goal?
Mm-hmm. So I already mentioned the relationship between, let's say, trust and inequality. I think there's also this growing macro literature that shows that distributional considerations are important for the transmission of monetary policy. Think, for example, of the asymmetric way in which interest rate increases and decreases affect people with a fixed rate mortgage, or the way changes in interest rates have redistributed interest income from households with a low marginal propensity to consume to those with a high propensity to consume. All these considerations matter for the transmission of monetary policy, and thus they play a role in how the central bank can achieve its mandate. So this is definitely important to understand how our policies transmit to the economy. Yeah.
Are you aware of any central bank that explicitly considers as part of its mandate equality as a policy goal? Is there any out there who does that, or at least to some extent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I would argue that probably the dual mandate of the Federal Reserve is closest to what you refer to, Dirk. So the Fed, as you know, has this dual mandate looking both at inflation and employment. And therefore, the Fed in some way attaches a clear weight to income inequality, in my view. Over the business cycle, again, unemployment is predominantly an issue for people with lower incomes and lower skills. So the FOMC will have to take this explicitly into consideration at some point. And this, as you know, is not the case for the ECB. Of course, the US also has a very different social system compared to Europe. In Europe, a lot of the business cycle fluctuations in the labor market are attenuated by labor market regulation or through fiscal transfers. Think, for example, of the short-term work schemes that we saw in the COVID crisis. So you could argue that in the euro area, we have a clearer division of labor between fiscal and monetary policy in that respect. I'm saying this as in the case of severe demand shocks, I think there is not so much conflict between, or there is not so much conflict for monetary policy between sustaining inflation and supporting activity and employment. But in the case of large supply shocks, as we are witnessing now, this trade-off may be much harder to handle. It's then very handy, I think, that you have a clear division of labor between well-designed and targeted fiscal policies, taking care of those distributional issues on the one hand, and on the other hand, monetary policy being able to focus on its inflation objective. Yeah.
It's somewhat ironic that the inequality in the US, though, is still a lot higher than in Europe.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's because the government has outsourced some of that job to the Fed, and maybe monetary policy is not really the best tool to address these.
Yeah.
Well, another important topic, at least currently discussed, is to what extent corporate profits are a driver for inflation. What can we say about this? How much of the current inflation can be indeed explained by excessive corporate margins, which of course come at least to some extent at the expense of workers' income? Is that a relevant development we're seeing?
So indeed, I think there's evidence or growing evidence that over the past year, many companies have managed actually quite well to sustain their profit margins, even if despite the surge in energy costs. And you can see that, for example, in developments in unit profits and other indicators. At the same time, I think that for the moment, it's not yet really clear to what extent that increase in margins has happened in anticipation of absorbing the rise in wages that we are witnessing at this moment as well, or whether these increases in margins will be of a more permanent nature. So the latter would potentially lead to a price wage spiral, which would, of course, make the ECB's job much harder. Again, here, I see an important role for targeted fiscal policies, actually. So to the extent that fiscal policy can dampen the purchasing power, can dampen the purchasing power losses of lower income households because of the surge in energy prices, it will also contribute to less pressure, I believe, on wages to catch up with inflation, and hence make it easier for monetary policy to achieve its objective. Eventually, workers and firms will have to agree on how to share the terms of trade loss from higher energy prices. So to me, this is another nice example of how monetary policy, the distribution of income, and fiscal policy are very closely intertwined.
Very good. Then I'll try a summary of all what you've said. I mean, let's start with the dispossessing of savers during the Draghi presidency, or during the period when interest rates went negative and QE took place. So it's when you looked at data, clear that older and wealthier households lost income, interest rate income because of that, and younger and poorer households actually gained because they had to pay less interest rates. And very poor households, you also found, are not really affected, not least because there's not much financial wealth to be affected. But what's also important that the labor market and the effect monetary policy has on the labor market employment rates is by far the most important channel in your view, in the sense that poorer households obviously are a lot more impacted by how the labor market develops. So that also means that the effect of higher rates, to some extent, will do the reverse of what we've seen in the past. So older and wealthier households will gain, But the mortgages are the crucial factor to watch here, to what extent there's an assessment change in interest rates or not. And usually they're fixed, and that makes the impact maybe less clear on average. And of course, there's the valuation effects of assets. The valuations go down as interest rates go up, valuation of bonds, equity and housing. And that works in the other way than the other effects. Should central banks be concerned about distributional effects? Well, they should certainly take them into account and discuss them, or at least acknowledge them as part of the democratic process or environment we live in. Transmission of policy also is to some extent affected by distributional effects, and just mechanically as the way a central bank operates, it needs to take that into account. Is there a central bank that takes it more explicitly into account how its policy affects inequality or equality? You mentioned the Fed with its dual mandate. And finally, corporate margins. They remained robust. There's some evidence that indeed corporates were able to shield themselves from the negative income shock from higher energy prices. It remains to be seen to what extent that will be still the case, given that wages are rising. And in the end, you argued for some kind of fair burden sharing between workers and capital owners on that front. Otherwise, the job of the ECB will get quite a bit more difficult. Was that a fair summary?
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Dirk.
Well, we have to thank you for your time. Very interesting. And I think it's a timely reminder that lots of interesting questions. One has to dig deep into the data and many different channels. And I'm stating the obvious here. Easy answers are often not right if one takes into account all these complicated effects. Well, thanks again for your time, Martin. And hope to have
thanks
you
for having
at some
me.
Point on the podcast again.